leadership, conflict, and community. The village wakes before the sun, but the cacique, the leader, has been awake since long before first light. His dwelling is larger than the others, circular with a peaked roof, but it is not a palace. Inside, the air is thick with the smell of smoked fish and woven cotton. Wooden stools and carved idols line the walls, each a gift from another village or a relic passed down through his lineage. The cacique's role is not just to command, but to embody the welfare of his people. Leadership among the Taino was a balance of power and service. A cacique had authority over land use, the allocation of resources, the settlement of disputes, and the organization of defense. But his authority rested as much on the trust and respect of his community as it did on inherited status. I watch as he receives the morning reports, the harvest yield from the canuco, the success of a fishing trip, the health of an elder. His advisors, close kin, respected warriors, and the Bihik sit with him in a semicircle. Decisions are reached through discussion, not decree. The cacique listens more than he speaks, yet leadership carried symbolic weight. At feasts, the cacique sat at the head of the beti, wearing a cotton belt embroidered with shells and feathers, his zimi displayed prominently. During ceremonies, he led the arraitos, setting the rhythm for dances that could last through the night. His presence was a visual reminder of continuity, the living link between ancestors and future generations. Across the islands, leadership styles varied. Some caciques governed large regions with multiple villages, coordinating defense and trade. Others led smaller communities, but with equal devotion to the social fabric. In all cases, the office of cacique was as much a spiritual role as a political one, to keep harmony between people, land, and the unseen world. Defense and conflict. It is tempting to see the Caribbean before European arrival as a paradise without strife, but that would be a romantic myth. The Taino, while largely a peaceful and agricultural people, understood the necessity of defense. I am standing at the edge of a beti when the conch shell sounds, a deep, resonant note rolling over the hills. It is not the call for a feast. Within moments, warriors appear, armed with wooden clubs, makanas, long spears tipped with sharpened bone, and bows strung with twisted plant fiber. Their bodies are painted in black and red, patterns meant to both intimidate enemies and honor protective spirits. Conflicts often arose over fishing grounds, hunting areas, or trade disputes. Sometimes they involved resistance against the Caribs from the Lesser Antilles, whose raids were feared across the region. While the Taino preferred negotiation, they were no strangers to coordinated defense. Villages were sometimes built inland or in elevated areas for protection. Lookouts were stationed along coastlines. The makana was the signature weapon, a hardwood club capable of delivering a lethal blow. In close combat, it was devastating. Warriors also relied on speed and coordination, using ambushes and terrain to their advantage. Even so, their warfare was ritualized compared to the total wars that Europeans would later wage. Captives were often integrated into the community rather than killed. Victory brought prestige to the cacique and warriors, but the aftermath of conflict was always tempered by rituals meant to restore balance. The Bihik would conduct cleansing ceremonies to ensure that the spiritual order was not disrupted by bloodshed. As I walk away from the beti, the echo of the conch still in my ears, I realize that for the Taino, conflict was never about conquest for its own sake. It was about protecting the network of life they had built, village life and social bonds. The hum of daily life in a Taino village is a symphony of human and natural rhythms. From my place in the central plaza, I can see nearly every aspect of community life in motion. Women kneel beside flat stones, grinding cassava into flour. Men weave fishing nets from palm fiber. Children chase each other between the posts of hammocks strung in the shade. Social bonds were the glue of Taino society. Kinship determined roles and responsibilities, but community extended beyond bloodlines. Food was shared communally. A successful fishing trip was not a private bounty, but a contribution to the village's collective table. The beti, the ceremonial and social plaza, served as the heart of communal life. It was here that disputes were settled, trade goods exchanged, and ceremonies performed. The stone-lined boundaries of the beti were more than architectural. They were symbolic markers of identity and belonging. Music and storytelling were woven into everyday life. Evenings often brought gatherings where elders told creation stories, hunters recounted adventures, and Behique shared moral lessons through allegory. These moments reinforced not only cultural memory, but the values of generosity, respect, and harmony. Housing reflected this interconnectedness. The bohayos, round houses with thatched roofs, were arranged around the central space, each open to neighbors and visitors. Privacy existed, but hospitality was a virtue. From dawn to dusk, village life was a dance of cooperation. The success of the group was inseparable from the well-being of the individual. In this way, the Taino sustained a society where survival was not just about food and shelter, but about the strength of human connection.